71 Churn Creek Road in Reading. Phone number is 221-5864. New West Medical, Living Breathing Solutions. KKRN thanks New West Medical for their support.
Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
Plato said that the unexamined life is not worth living, so on our programs every first and third Monday night, we examine various aspects of human life, human nature, and how they relate to each other.
And tonight we're going to talk about corporate America and the human nature behind corporate America.
Yes, human nature behind corporate America. I'm sure we have lots of strong opinions on that.
Corporate America is actually easy to blame for everything. We need an evil for everything, somebody guilty of something. And corporate America is not an identifiable person. It's a vague, faceless, out there, ubiquitous industry that is possibly sinister to most of us.
And, you know, when you talk about corporate America, you're talking about every kind of business, of course, except the kind from which the person complaining draws his or her pay.
Yes. Big business is part of every industry, and every industry human beings are a part of.
And when you talk about those evil drug companies or those other evil financial companies, you have to wonder how much of grandma's retirement portfolio is doing well because of the big profits of those evil corporations.
I was once told back, I think it was in the 80s, when gasoline had skyrocketed and there were you had to get in line to get gas. And someone had said to me, if you want to beat Big Oil and profit from their business, because it seemed like they were thriving at the time, buy their stock and be a stockholder and get their dividend. That's how you get paid from their profits. Well, does that not make me part of the owner of big business and industry?
And that's true. But, you know, if you want to solve the problem also, you can become a bigger and bigger part of that corporation and help to change it if you think your ideas are better.
Yes, there is a voting element to being a stockholder. And the more shares you have, obviously, the more influence you have on that vote. But the board of directors are the people that supposedly run the company, and you can influence them with your vote.
And of course, many people will say, well, I don't have the kind of money it takes to invest that much in a company. But, you know, you can vote with your feet. And I think if you can separate corporate America from the government, then you do have influence. But most of us are not willing to give up that great price or the convenience of shopping or buying from that giant corporation. And if you don't do that, then you are part of the problem.
And if you have a 401k or an IRA account with stocks in business or industry, then you are also part of that industry.
Right. If you don't deliberately remove yourself from that very profitable stock that you think is so evil, then and granted, you could say, well, my company is the one investing. If they're investing it in a corporation that you're against, you should not accept that evil investment.
And that makes you, again, part of big industry. And I think we fail to recognize we as human beings are the ones that are part of corporate America, no matter how you slice it, as a shopper, as an investor, as general public that walk in the store.
And I think when you separate the corporation from the government, you do have the power to vote with your feet. If all of America would be more responsible and more ethical and not shop with those companies. You have to remember, they're companies for a reason, because they have to sell something. And in order to make money, people have to buy it.
And we have a tendency to vilify industry. We believe that pollution is caused by industry. What we fail to acknowledge is that it occurs as a byproduct, pollution, as a byproduct of people making things, and that's including making a living. It is part of whatever it is you're producing or manufacturing. There is usually some sort of byproduct that is pollution.
Right. And when you think about the green movement to change the environment, where did that start? That started in America during a time when corporations were not considered as evil as they are today. So they had a little more free rein. But the country that promoted free enterprise was the first country to promote green. It was the citizens, not the corporations, but nevertheless, they were all part of the same country.
And our first Earth Day, which was way back in the late 60s, early 70s, I don't forget exactly when.
It was the early 70s.
It wasn't about air pollution or water pollution. It was about overcrowding the planet.
Yeah, it does. The movement keeps changing to adapt to the political times.
And the there was no EPA at that time. That was a new government agency that was created to control big industry primarily.
And I think it was it not a Republican president who created the EPA?
I'd have to look that up.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It seems like it was, but I could be wrong. But, you know, and I'm very libertarian minded. And yet I'm for all of those great ideas we had in the 60s and the 70s, all the hippies and all the thoughts about compassion and caring for the helpless and cleaning the planet, all of those. The only downfall that I see to their movement was that they brought it to government and they gave it to government to do instead of doing the less lazy way of going out there and promoting it and getting people to join them and getting donations and doing it the hard way, which would have worked.
Yeah, and Earth Day was a prime example of that. I mean, look how many millions of people, even Arbor Day, look how many people go out and plant a tree on Arbor Day. There is a lot of participation, and it's all volunteer.
You remember the first Earth Day, the aftermath? It was so hilarious. I don't remember the date, but I remember seeing the news about it later. The place was trashed.
Yes.
They dumped more garbage than you've ever seen in your life. It just goes to show you how disingenuous some of those movements are.
Well, not only that, but protesters are people. And again, it's human nature. It's easier for me to throw it on the ground than it is to hunt up a trash can.
And again, that's the same thing that promotes the lazy green movement of getting the government involved instead of doing it yourself as a group and doing the work to get other people to join you until you have a grassroots movement. The same mentality that doesn't do that is the same mentality that trashes up the place because they just want to demonstrate and feel good about themselves.
That's right. And not all demonstrators are really a core believer in the cause necessarily.
Right.
But pollution, it's actually a result of human enterprise and its inherent civilization. All societies want to manufacture or sell something to somebody else or another country. That's why we have trade. And that raises their standard of living.
And I think, you know, if you're going to involve government in cleaning up the air, just make a simple rule. Something that I had some thoughts I had put together on that is to just make a simple rule that instead of all the myriad and complex regulations, it says no agency, person, or legal entity can produce or cause to be produced more than X amount of these pollutants. But no detail about how it's to be done. It's when government starts detailing, you'll do it with this catalytic converter, or you'll do it with all this machinery, or with this methodology. Just say, we are not going to allow pollutants. I don't care how you avoid producing them. You just don't produce them.
And California, when I was a teenager, you could not breathe the air in Los Angeles. I mean, you could see it, smell it, taste it, and everything else. And it's only when they started putting those restrictions on car exhaust that it got cleaned up. And that went along fine until they went off the deep end with the catalytic converter manufactured by a certain style of a catalytic converter that made it that much worse a problem than it started out to be.
That somebody's relative had invented. Instead of just saying, if you imagine what would have happened if you would have said, here's the pollutants and here's the level that we're going to allow in California to be expelled by a vehicle, but didn't put any restrictions on how to do that. An amazing number of free enterprise ideas would have sprung up and all would have been in contest to be cleaner and to be cheaper. And can you imagine the option we'd have today and probably cleaner air? The catalytic converters have a lot of problems.
And really, if you think about it, the State of Jefferson movement, one of the problems is the state regulations One of them is CARB, the California Air Resources Board, that has passed a law about a filter they want put on all motors, including your tractor, which the supposedly this filter costs more than the tractor. So it's not even logical anymore.
It's just better to do things simply, but of course, with government, you'll never do that because they need control and they want to decide how it's done. And again, there will always be those friends of theirs that have a special way to do it. And so the law will say this is the way you have to do it.
But we don't have to go to that extremes. We've had societies and industrialized nations that have functioned very well without all the government interference. We did as a nation for decades, 100 years. Every nation wants a more safe and comfortable life. All working people want more higher standard of living. They want more wealth, better health, more leisure time. And these are all things that progress creates, and the byproduct of progress sometimes is pollution. We just, like you say, have to make it a standard and not make it micromanaged.
Right. There's, you know, and again, I remind you that we, our country's the one who started this movement to clean up the air, and did it at a time when corporations were at their peaks and they weren't that restricted. And the nation, the mentality of our free nation, is the one that came up with the idea. And it was a capitalistic nation at that time, when the European countries and a lot of the others were first experimenting with socialism. None of them wanted things to be clean. They just wanted to promote their ideology. But in America, as free thinkers, we were thinking you need to clean up the planet.
And we did a pretty good job of it by even though it was some restrictions on corporate America came in line and they still made plenty of money.
And you know, it's never going to be perfect, but think of where our environmental control is and where the rest of the world is. And yet we're not demanding that their trade products that come into this country are made by companies that don't pollute. We're doing the expedient thing, as we always do when politics are involved.
The other thing that big business is often accused of is creating poverty. And corporate America hires and employs a great number of people. And I realize that it is small business that employs the majority of people. But corporate America still employs a huge number of people. And it was those blue-collar workers that built this industrialized country that we call America now.
That's right. And when the unions came up, they were a necessary thing to happen, because some of the workers didn't like they were being treated, and they created their union, and they made a movement. The unions have become politicized and so on now, but in the beginning, they served a good purpose. They just reached beyond their ability, where they needed to be.
And every country, a lot of people have contempt for corporate America and the progress, but that contempt is unreasonable. Any third world nation wants more. They want something that we have, be it cell phones or any commodity or service that we've created here in the United States, they would also like in their country.
And when they produce these things, they produce them without any consideration of pollution control.
Or government control, even if they're socialized. China is learning this, that, you know, they have socialized country, but they have what they're trying to create is a capitalistic area of business for small businesses. But they're finding it's not that easy. Human nature is, man is not naturally a good person. Human nature, a lot of people think that natural man is naturally good. But if you've ever raised a toddler or a teenager, you know that it is inherent that good is not always their first choice.
That's right. You know, a lot of us do have desire to help other people, and probably all of us have those desires at certain parts in our life. But it's not cynical to say what Pat just said. It's understanding human nature, that we all have a negative and a positive side, or good or evil, however your personal culture wants to put it. We have to understand that, you know, biological organisms are that way. You don't survive by giving everything away. You just don't. It's not, that's not how life works.
And business and government are run by men and women, and they want what they want. And most men and women that get into positions of power want more power or more wealth.
Exactly. I get a kick out of some of the recent Stossel programs where he tricks people. He goes into a city park that the city has outsourced to a private corporation to manage. The corporation doesn't charge people. They run the park on a amount of money that the city would have spent, and usually less than the city would have spent to manage it themselves. And he talks to the people about the park. And that's all he mentions to them. And they all are, oh, yeah, it's wonderful. It's the greatest park. The bathrooms are clean, unlike any other park I've been to. The vendors are all honest, and everything's wonderful about the park. And then he says, are you aware that this park is run by a private corporation? And they're just flabbergasted, and they just think that's wrong.
And think about it. This corporation is in the business of just keeping that park neat and clean. They're not paid by the person visiting the park. They're paid by the city or county. And the city and county get sidetracked by their bureaucracy. So it costs them less to pay someone else who focuses only on the park and not on all the other things the government gets sidetracked with in their bureaucracies, and they do a better job of letting private enterprise do it.
And what I find fascinating is that the thing that really keeps them focused is their greed.
Corporate America?
Yes, they want that park to run perfectly by the city's standards that they were given, because they can make money doing that.
And they pay their stockholders, chances are, a dividend. If not, they reinvest in another park, yep, so that it's growing, their corporation is growing. But mankind is, authority has always been attracted by mankind that want what they want without regard to how they get it or who pays for it. And so that corporation, they don't care who's paying, and they want a bottom line profit, and they're going to keep their costs down to get it.
That's right. And so you just give them a simple set of rules of how to operate, and not all these complex regulations, just a simple set of ethical rules how to operate. The city gives them a budget. They decide they can do what the city wants on that budget, and the park turns out to be a wonderful place and a big improvement over the city-run park.
And I think a lot of us remember that all parks were city parks, okay? Municipalities maintain city parks. In Reading, we have a lot of parks that are actually built by subdivision developers. They have to put in a park as part of their project plan, and that park, it gets turned over to the community. But here in Reading, we have a lot of people that volunteer to beautify those parks with grass, play areas for kids. So it is almost a community event here.
Right. And you know, some communities will do that better than others. We're going to take a little break. We're at about a third of the way through our show. When we come back, we'll talk about some more of corporate America and maybe include a little health care in there. Be back shortly.
Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
Thank you.
with my fancies, I'll be with you, weaving romances, making believe they're true. Oh, give me lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live. Oh, give me what you alone can give. I kiss the pill I dream on.
Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN 88.5 FM.
KKRN is community-supported radio, so please support your local station at every opportunity.
And tonight we're talking about corporate America. And the freedoms that our country provide us is freedom of choice. And we had talked about buying or not buying a product or supporting corporate America if you feel that they're evil in some way. A free society allows people to do what they want to do as long as they don't harm anyone else, which means your rights end where mine begin. And we'd like to think that corporate America adheres to that same rule.
But if freedom means everyone does whatever they want, then the meaner or the stronger will soon prevail and force everyone to do what they want. And that, again, is human nature. Some people have to be in charge of everything, or some people want everything, or some people just want to be compassionate. It's a wonderful mix of people, but it always leads to conflict.
And the same people that are in day-to-day life are the same people that run government or corporations. And there's an interesting hymn that Catherine Lee Bates identified with when she sang, and it was, one of the lyrics was, "Confirm my soul in self-control, thy liberty and law," meaning that we do have to have rules. Rules are what allow us to become what we're supposed to be in pursuit of our own happiness. But again, human nature is we get intoxicated by power and money, and we need those rules. Our country is based on rule of law.
And I think we want to, for some reason, protect everybody from every concern. We make these rules more and more constrictive to protect us from ourselves. And freedom cannot be freedom without consequences of your choice.
This is true, but, you know, a society that ignores man's nature has no way to suppress the worst in him other than by law.
Exactly. So when you make rules, I mean, they made very simple rules in the original Constitution and,
yes,
the Bill of Rights. And that's where we need to leave it. Instead of trying to protect us from making stupid decisions and buying dumb things and going broke because of it, strife is what makes us grow, and trying to protect us from our bad decisions is just wrong.
Well, I think government has lost sight of the fact, and our original founders believed that we need to control government as it's run by mere man and subject to the same excesses and abuses that mankind has inherent in human nature.
That's exactly true. They based a lot on their religious backgrounds, so They considered rights to be God-given. If you're more secular, you could say that the rights are just a basic right of nature that other people will try to take away from you if they're so inclined. And so the government's there to protect that, to protect your basic rights, but not to infringe on any of them, just to protect other non-government people from trying to take them away from you. It's our job to keep the government from taking away from us.
And our government is sometimes, I feel, running away with some of our rights. P.J. O'Rourke wrote a book in the 1990s called The Parliament of Horrors. And in there, and that's W-H-O-R-E-S, and in the book, he was talking about government, and it happened to be the elections of, I think, 1990. But in any event, his quote from the book is, "Government is concerned mostly with self-perpetuation and is subject to fantastic ideas about its own capabilities."
Yeah, think about the person, for instance, and I'm going to be a little facetious here and probably a little judgmental, but think about the person at the EPA who has a job to protect a certain frog. They find out about this frog, and they find out it lives in certain areas. So they go out and they create regulations, and they maybe destroy a farmer's farm or maybe not. But they go through all these gyrations and interrupt all these natural processes to save this frog. What's that person going to have to justify their job next year unless they go find another thing to regulate? If they've saved the frog and created a police force and created administration to save it, what do they do next year? That's their motivation. So how can it do anything but grow out of proportion?
It's self-perpetuating. He goes on to say, government is wasteful of the nation's resources, immune to common sense, and subject to pressures from every half-organized, and we'll use another word he used, profanity, we'll use the word lobbyist.
Half-organized banquet of blankety-blanks.
Yeah, we'll call them lobbyists. And he goes on to say from his own observations as a Washington Press Corps member that government is distrustful and disrespectful toward average Americans while being easily gulled by Americans with money and influence or fame. Government is morally wrong. This is part of our problem with government regulations is they bend too easily to groups that are self-interested.
Or if they don't do that, they grow out of control again because that bureaucrat has to perpetuate their job and their relevance in government. And the only way to do that, if you fixed a problem, you have to find another problem to fix.
Exactly.
The difficulty is absolute power corrupts. So you don't really care if your problem you've created hurts anybody, but it gives you a job, so you do what you need to do to keep your job.
And unfortunately, our government has a way of red tape, the bureaucracy of red tape. No matter what agency you go into, the government, it seems like you get caught up in what we call red tape.
And that goes back to the idea of the government not trusting the people that it's supposed to protect. Every time I start a new person in the medical business that I'm in, there's a line that I have to have them initial on a paper that essentially is telling the government, no, I didn't go get this from somebody else yesterday and I'm trying to cheat the government. They have to say that. It can't just be assumed.
Isn't that sad? I know the field that I'm in is real estate, and we have the same thing. It's what we call CYA documentation, but it is the legal people have gotten hold of our industry as well, and now you have to initial and initial and initial saying that you're not lying, that you've been told this, you've been told that. And it's almost overwhelming. It's like when they go to sign loan documents, there's 102 pages of loan documents. After a while, your eyes just glaze over. It doesn't mean that you understand it any better by putting your initial on the paper.
That's what led me to come up with my crazy idea of taxing that anyone who writes a contract or uses a contract should be taxed according to the number of words in the contract.
Well, unfortunately, government is run by man.
And woman.
And women. And if men and women were angels and always level-headed, then no government would be necessary. But we aren't that by nature. And so we have to have government, and we have to enable government to control the governed, and we also have to oblige it to control itself.
And see, that's how they came up with such a perfect system. They realized that you had to have some form of government to organize the society, but they tried to make it so that the people controlled the government, not the other way around. And somehow we've changed that now.
We've lost sight of that.
And it was a perfect system. They were kind of helping each other out. But it's because people get in government, they want personal power. That's human nature. That's not evil. That's just nature. That's the biggest rat wanting to have all the money in the females. It's the way people are built.
And government is no different. Government, it was determined that should make policy that has a good purpose based on sound principle, which may be moral back then, and like care for the poor. It's a good principle. Raising the minimum wage, which was a policy that came from that. For everyone. And the purpose was to make everybody equally wealthy. And see how ridiculous that has gone through time? It just can't happen. They intended to mean well when they passed it, but in the big picture, the unintended consequences don't work the way they expect.
I ran a graph. I just went online, got the simple stats from the government. I got all 50 states and their minimum wage, and then I got all 50 states and their unemployment. And guess what? They followed each other right up the hill. They were. There was one blurb because of a state that had a really terrible unemployment and didn't have any minimum wage. But all the others had minimum wages, and the higher the minimum wage, the higher the unemployment rate. It's simple. You can talk all the politics and all the stuff you want, but the numbers show it. And when government tried to get involved in healthcare, it's been a horrible experience.
Part of the problem with the minimum wage is the government benefits the most. The employee winds up paying more income tax, and so does the
employer.
And the employer has to increase prices to compensate, so the employee can't buy any more with those small additional pennies. And the other problem is our society has decided that the poor, they all should have a color TV, a cell phone, a vehicle to get back and forth to work, and adequate leisure time to do whatever it is they want. And so consequently, our standard of living for anyone who's working is not that low. Now, that does not include the unemployed or the homeless. We're talking about working people.
But they want people to have some kind of a level of income that keeps them in a relatively comfortable lifestyle. And what does that do for human development? I mean, it's the struggle for food and shelter that makes you be creative and makes you go out and feel wonderful when you overcome obstacles. And they want to somehow take that away and just make people not care about anything but getting up, going to the job, and watching Dancing with the Stars at night, and then repeating it all the next day.
Well, not only that, but the working young person that comes out of school needs incentive to keep getting educated rather than, you know, live in the basement at mom's house because they don't want a minimum paying job at the burger flipping place. If you don't have that comfortable, very comfortable standard for them, then they have to go and get educated. They have to hone their skills. They have to get creative about getting a job. It might not be the perfect job. None of us, I think, started out with the perfect job, but it was a stepping stone that we could get educated either through our job to get a better job, or we did that. We subsidized making two jobs or going to school and working part-time so that we could, in time, benefit ourselves through advances.
That's right. I've had jobs that I really loved, but they didn't pay enough money. So instead of finding one that paid more money, it was my choice to keep that job and get a second job. And those are the kind of decisions you make when you have freedom, when you have true freedom, when there's no safety net or minimal safety net, and you have to make life choices. It's invigorating. But when it's all given to you so you don't have to worry about going hungry, there's no motivation to be better, to do better.
And our government should minimize its policies and keep them simple and broad and get out of the way. The money we had in the past to make us think we could prevent poverty came primarily from enterprise.
From those evil corporations.
Right. You know, a lot of them provide, what do they call them, scholarship programs. A lot of them provide internship programs. A lot of them hire and educate. Or once they see potential in someone they've hired, they will pay for your education. So corporate America is not evil, and they do provide for those employees that want to contribute, want to make it better for the company.
That's right. But the problem is, I guess, it's just impossible for government to leave any regulations they create simple. It's, as I said, they have to create relevance, and the only way to do that is to come up with more stuff next year.
And look what they've done to healthcare.
Just think of all the people in the last 200 years that have said without thinking there ought to be a law.
And where has that gotten us?
Yeah.
We now have all kinds of laws.
Yeah, we have our healthcare law, and I have a little bit to say about that.
Okay.
In the 1980s, in the industry that I'm in, there was this perfect situation, and it was perfect because Medicare didn't understand our industry. It was new, the medical equipment industry, and so Medicare really didn't know what to pay or how to pay. They just kind of paid according to what the prevailing amount was. And companies got rich by buying an oxygen machine for $500 and then renting it to Medicare for almost $500 a month. And you would think that's piracy. However, the companies, if a patient that was on their oxygen went into the hospital for one day that month on the wrong day, the company lost the whole month of $500. So they hired people like me that were not cheap because we had college degrees and in medicine to keep that person out of the hospital, to keep them healthy. And they hired as many of us as we needed because they were making good money. And so we kept the patients out of the hospital because it was they were greedy and they wanted to make that money. So what we had was a situation where the patient got top-notch a concierge that was on call for them all the time.
Constant attention.
Yeah. And Medicare paid for much fewer hospital admissions of these respiratory patients because they were being kept out of the hospital and the companies were getting rich. Everybody won. But Medicare, because they didn't pay for those services, they only paid for the machines, they thought, wow, we're paying way too much. So they started cutting. And now if you look on the web, you'll find, look up hospital readmissions. Medicare's attacking hospitals for readmitting pulmonary patients too soon. Guess how that happened?
Taking away the benefits from the companies that were providing the care.
And it comes from not understanding economy. Governments just don't really understand how economy works and how greed can be beneficial.
And unfortunately, we have legislators passing laws that affect medical care that they know nothing about.
And there's a new competitive bidding law in our industry where if you live in a populated area like Orange County or someplace, you used to have a choice of an oxygen company. And so they had to be good to you or the doctor would try to find a different company for them. But now they've changed it where they allow bids in a given area like Orange County, and the company that comes up with the lowest bid for that oxygen becomes your only source for oxygen in that area. So if they are a lousy company and don't treat you very well, guess what? You don't have a choice. And are they going to treat you very well when the way they got there was by giving the lowest bid?
And are they going to provide you the most up-to-date equipment?
Not at all. You know, the general public doesn't know about it, so everybody thinks it's wonderful what the government's doing.
And it's, again, unintended consequences of legislation that nobody wants to read. I think it was Pelosi who had that famous comment about them passing that 1,000-page medical coverage, and her comment was, we have to pass it in order to know what's in it. We can read it later.
You can't write this stuff.
I know.
And I can't believe, I mean, to tell you where we are as a nation, she said that with impunity in public.
I know. And she believed it because our legislators believe this kind of stuff. They have no clue what this legislation contains and the unintended consequences of it.
And I'm amazed that people continue to support this kind of politics.
When we come back, we'll talk about another government corporate mixture, the GSEs.
I hope you're enjoying the program. This is Examine Life. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Just a pillar dream on. And my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this. A kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me. And my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part. A kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
Welcome back to Examine Life. KKRN 88.5 FM on your radio in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. Please support community radio.
Tonight we're talking about corporate America and government's influence or collaboration. And we talked about earlier about government making policy with a good purpose. And the government's attempt to do this was Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And that was back in 1938. And that was to enable home ownership by lower and middle class America.
And what are those called?
Fannie and Freddie are called, you'll hear about it in economic news as GSEs.
What are those? What does that stand for?
Government-sponsored enterprises. And those were businesses created and for affordable housing, and it was backed by a government line of credit. It was not a guarantee like FHA. It was just they had a line of credit and they could loan money because banks after the crash of 29 was not loaning money, especially to lower or middle class Americans. So these agencies were created as government enterprises that would kind of like back these loans to banks. Banks made the loan and then they package it and sold it to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Now, why did they need to back the loans? Why weren't the banks willing to make the loans?
Well, one, the banks didn't have a lot of money and they didn't want to make a 30-year loan to people, especially in those times that were very questionable. And the United States and Denmark are the only countries on earth that have a 30-year mortgage where someone makes a payment and after 30 years they own their home. And so this was a new concept of a way to finance buying a house and paying over a long term, and then it would eventually be yours.
So that's interesting. I didn't realize that. What are the other mortgages like around the world? 10 years or 5 years? Or
I assume so.
How can anybody afford that? Or I guess they don't have prices like ours, or only
that,
the rich buy homes?
That's right, and there's not a lot of home ownership, especially in middle and lower class. A lot of societies don't have middle class that own property. A lot of countries restrict property ownership stringently. But Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were exempt from taxes, so they didn't have to pay corporate taxes and like banks did, and they didn't have these stringent capital requirements that banks did, especially after the new laws that were passed in the 1930s because of the banks running amok earlier. So the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were considered the lenders of last resort. Banks could make a loan as long as it met the criteria of those lending agencies and then sell that loan so that they could use their deposits to loan to somebody else.
Hmm.
It's kind of a cycle. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, okay, they only have two ways of making money. They get a fee for guaranteeing the payments on the mortgages that they buy. And then, which they resell as mortgage-backed securities. And you'll find out, we used to do this in a very similar way. The bank sold the loan and someone collected it. And Wall Street got a hold of that idea and went crazy with it in the last decade or so. But that's how Fannie and Freddie generated money. And the other thing they did was, because the government gave them, the U.S. Treasury gave them a line of credit, and they had very, very low interest rates that they could borrow money from the Treasury with, but they got 6% on the mortgage. The difference between the 1% the Treasury charged them, or 2% or whatever it was at the time, and the 6% they were collecting, which was the average mortgage interest rate over decades, was 6%. The difference between those two was the money they made. So they would make money on just the fact that they had bought those loans from someone else.
See, and I, and me and my evil ways, what I'm seeing is that the government got involved in making loans to, for this wonderful idea of having more home ownership, and the vultures started coming in, the Wall Street and all of that, because government money was involved, because people are going to be less careful with government-backed money.
And it was that way until 1968, the government decided that they were going to change the regulation and allow the companies to be like corporations and for profit. So you could buy stocks in them. And everyone thought that these were guaranteed loans that the Fannie and Freddie were getting. So everybody would invest in them and they made money. The problem started arising when those derivatives started getting the attention of politicians who wound up running the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, their cronies or their friends. The son of a Minnesota politician who was one of the CEOs, he created a foundation within the structure of Fannie and Freddie. And it was nothing more than an advertising arm that had millions of dollars of contracts that gained a lot of influence with politicians.
See, I think sometimes it happens in the short term and sometimes in the long term. And we're going to talk about these subjects on another show. But whenever you get the federal government involved, it's going to devolve sooner or later. It creates artificial supports and artificial paradigm views of how the economy works and how things are working. And it always ends up inevitably in a crash, because if you talk to a lot of economists, they'll tell you that a crash is a natural thing. And when a government does these things to try to prevent a crash, they delay it. But the crash is probably proportionally large as the delay they created to prevent it from happening. They're natural cyclical things.
Well, unfortunately, it was a great idea. Congress created this entity using taxpayers' money. But as they turned it over to corporate America or made it a for-profit corporation, then we started getting people gravitate to the power that CEO position had, not only with legislators, but with low-income special interest groups.
Right.
And those lobbyists started making it better for the CEO to do what they wanted to do.
Yeah, it's again, it's a subject for another show that I'm really trying to stay away from for tonight.
I know.
But it's so obvious to me that every direction you look around things like this, you come up with one simple solution: keep the government out of it and let the chips fall where they may, and there will be ups and downs.
Well, this is kind of the reverse of corporate America kind of gone wrong. This is government agency gone wrong as it tried to be a corporation.
Right.
And it didn't know exactly what it wanted to be. And it would say the government was guaranteeing these loans when in fact it wasn't. And it wasn't until 2003, I think, when President Bush then reappointed the directors and a good number of the directors that ran Freddie and Fannie, and had an independent audit done, that they really found out that, you know, $27 million were going to bonuses to the CEOs because they were on track to only get compensation if the company made a profit. Well, that meant they hid losses. Or they, when interest rates were contracting, they were still making huge profits, which was impossible. You can't take in less money and make more profit. But nobody was paying attention because it was a government agency type of thing.
So it must be okay.
Must be okay. And it wasn't until then that everyone started to really take a serious look at it. And by then it was, you know, it was too late. The $37 million or $27 million was already out the door.
And, of course, we had the SEC, and did we still get the Bernie Madoffs? Sure, we did.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, Ponzi schemes were the original con back 300 years ago.
Yeah.
And they've just kind of, you know, massaged it in different ways, but it is still one of the biggest scams that there is, and the other is accounting fraud.
And the SEC and other government regulations don't prevent those things because they can't.
Well, it's human nature that the con man preys on the victim as, okay, you're going to make a better profit than anybody else on this investment. You're going to make it three times. And if it's too good to be true, chances are it is. And that's the whole theory behind a Ponzi scheme.
And what he's preying on is the greed of the poor little helpless guy that the government's trying to protect him from himself.
And Bernie Madoff, ironically, did not steal from the poor little guy who was putting money in a savings account. He stole from the filthy rich.
And so if you can't protect somebody who's more sophisticated about finances, how do you ever hope to really protect the common citizen? You have to let them make their mistakes so they can learn from their mistakes and do better next time.
Yeah, the only time, and I will discuss this at length in our next show, but I really feel that in order to preserve the small guy's belief in what's going on in business is ethical and that they can trust what's going on in the stock market or they can trust on what's going on with their investments, their 401k. In order to continue that belief, you have to have some kind of regulation because it's the human nature. It's too big a temptation.
See, I'm not sure that I agree. And the reason is because back in the early days when this country really was becoming great, when it was doing all the things that were making it great, no one trusted anybody. And that's why it became great. People were careful with their money.
But again, that was because only the filthy rich had money. As you moved west, think about the railroad who was allowed to run amok for couple of decades. And what did they do? They abused their power.
No, the filthy rich had a lot of money, but they're not the only ones that had money. People built ranches, they built companies from when they started poor. The guy that invented what is the elevator guy?
Otis.
Otis. He wasn't rich, he was poor. The rich weren't the only ones that had money. They just had the most.
And it's the entrepreneurial spirit of free enterprise capitalism that created Otis's wealth. He generated wealth through his initiative. And that's not all the only way big money gets wealth. Unfortunately, families have handed it down through decades and decades, and they're the ones that are considered top-level tier earners.
Well, I actually disagree with a lot of people about inheritance taxes. I think inheritance tax should be 100%, but I think it should be the only tax. That you keep all of your money as long as you're alive. And when you go, put it back in the pot, just like in Monopoly. And by the way, Monopoly was invented by a man during the Depression who wasn't rich.
Right. But, you know, talking about inheritance tax and the rich, Bill Gates has convinced 127 other billionaires to not only philanthropic donations, but when they die, half of their estate will go to a charity.
Well, I mean, he probably participated. A lot of people give Bill Gates a lot of credit. He was a great businessman, very, very much a hawk, and he would take the shirt right off your back if he could, which is good business practice. But Huntsman, whose son was actually, I believe, the Libertarian candidate for one president campaign. He had decided to do that long before. He had made statements. He was one of the richest men in the world. He invented the packaging for McDonald's hamburgers and things like that. And he has always said that he wasn't leaving anything to his kids, and they were fine with that.
Yes, but Bill Gates gets a lot of credit for getting another 100 of them billionaires online to do that. And that is, here we go. These are all CEOs primarily that built something from nothing or their own creativity. Some of them inherited companies. But by and large, these are people in business that have this extreme wealth, and they are going to give half of it away upon their deaths.
And I think this shows you that we need to leave corporate America more alone than we do right now. These guys did not become giant corporation leaders by being kind, but they made their money and they became philanthropic. And so we need to leave people. In the end, the universe will balance itself if you just give people freedom.
And
keep government and corporations separate from each other.
And we'll talk more on this next week about the influence of money, lobbyists, what's happening with some of the regulation that is stifling business as well that I think was necessary. Things particularly in the financial world that were needed. Changes that not only after the 1929 crash, but after our recent recession, I think a lot of those kinds of legislation was necessary.
And this has been Examine Life. We hope you'd have enjoyed our program. We've certainly enjoyed being here with you. So join us again a couple of Mondays from now.
This is 88.5 on your FM dial, community radio in the Hill Country, KKRN, Bella Vista.
Programming on KKRN Community Radio is brought to you in part by Les Schwab Tires in Burney. Les Schwab is an independent tire dealer in business since 1952. Les Schwab in Burney offers tires, brakes, alignments, wheels, batteries, shocks, and even automotive parts. Les Schwab is located at 37462 Main Street in Burney. Quotes or appointments can be made by calling 335-2251, or their selection can be seen online at leschwab.com.
Programming on KKRN is made possible by listeners like you and in part by anewscafe.com, where North State news, color, and commentary can be found online. The online news source brings regional writers and photographers together to give news that is positively North State.